until I KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint. K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove. KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay. KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass. And KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset. Starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sitkanap to Castle Cape, small craft advisory today. Today, northwest winds 30 knots, seas 6 feet. Tonight, northwest winds 20 knots, seas 4 feet. And Wednesday, variable winds 10 knots, seas 2 feet. Castle Cape to Cape Tolstoy, today northwest winds 15 knots, seas 2 feet. Tonight, variable winds 10 knots, seas 1 foot. And Wednesday, variable winds 10 knots, seas 1 foot. Cape Tolstoy to Cape Sarashef, today northwest winds 15 knots, seas 2 feet with fog. Tonight, variable winds 10 knots, seas 1 foot. And Wednesday, variable winds 10 knots, seas 1 foot. Port Hyde and Nelson Lagoon, today west winds 15 knots, seas 3 feet with fog. Tonight, variable winds 10 knots, seas 3 feet. And Wednesday, variable winds 10 knots, seas 3 feet. Nelson Lagoon to Cape Sarashef, today variable winds 10 knots, seas 3 feet with fog. Tonight, variable winds 10 knots, seas 4 feet. And Wednesday, variable winds 10 knots, seas 4 feet. Your detailed forecast for the Alaska Peninsula. Today, partly cloudy. Areas of freezing fog in the morning. Highs in the lower 30s. Northwest winds 15 miles an hour. Tonight, partly cloudy in the evening, then becoming mostly cloudy. Lows in the lower 30s. Variable winds 10 miles an hour. And Wednesday, partly sunny. Highs in the upper 30s. Light winds. Your tide predictions for the Popoff Island. There was a high tide at 4:35 a.m. at 8 feet 7 inches. A low tide at 11:31, a minus tide of 1 foot 3 inches. A high tide at 6 o'clock at 6 feet 2 inches. And a low at 11:07 tonight at 2 feet 4 inches. Your sun rose at 8:11 this morning. And your sun will set at 9:20, giving us 13 hours and 9 minutes of daylight hours. And that was your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset here on KSDP and KAEB. I am Amy Mack. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Coming up on KUCB News, the Kamalungan tribe is looking to diversify some of its funding sources following federal cuts. And a new executive order could lead to voter disenfranchisement in rural Alaska Native communities. Stay tuned.
Local programming on KUCB is made possible by the Aleutian Housing Authority, providing affordable housing services in the Aleutian Pribilof Islands region and working hard to create employment, job training opportunities, and promote economic development. More information at ahaak.org.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us. It's Tuesday, April 1st, 2025. Did you know that your shoelace is untied? Now you do. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk, with some local news from Unalaska. The Kamalungan Tribe of Unalaska depends on federal funding for most of its programs, including food distribution services and cultural activities. That funding was recently threatened by changes at the national level, including within the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Shayla Shishnikov serves as president of the Tribal Council and the tribe's interim administrator. She says when the second Trump administration took office, federal funding cuts led to some of the tribe's grants being paused and some employees being furloughed. But those interruptions have since ended. Most grant-funded projects are back on track, and all furloughed employees are working again. In response to what happened, the tribe is looking to diversify its funding sources. I sat down with Shishnikov for an update on the Kamalungan tribe's programs. Here's part of our conversation. I want to talk a little bit about what's new within the tribe based on the fact that we just have a lot of cuts happening at the federal level. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find an organization in town that's not at least thinking about how this could impact their work. So with that being said, my first question is, how have the current federal administration's recent funding cuts affected your organization's operations and services?
Yeah, we definitely have been impacted. That's for sure. I think we're pretty lucky in the sense that all of the grants that we did have put on freeze, I think there are about 12 of them, they have since been reopened. So we've been able to start working under those grants again. Unfortunately, during that time, we did have to furlough a couple employees. So there was a tangible impact there. Since then, we've been able to bring them back. And this has helped our operations significantly. And this all happened during a transition of leadership also. So I came on right in the middle of that, which was another hurdle. But I think we're definitely moving on the right path.
These grants came back. What was that process like? How did you hear about, oh, we have the money again?
Yeah, so essentially we were given the thumbs up from our project officers to say, you know, we have the green light. You can begin working on these projects. And you could begin charging again. So that was great news.
And what were some of the projects that were put on pause?
For example, one of our remediation grants was put on pause. We had other remediation grants that remained active. We had our food grant, which I know has been a hot topic for people. It's something that's important to our community as far as our food distributions go. We had some of our cultural and tribal justice grants be put on pause, in addition to, you know, others as well. Like I said, I think there were 12.
How much of your organization's budget relies on federal funding, and which specific programs are the most vulnerable?
Well, the tribe is almost 100% dependent on federal funding. We're a grant-run organization. So it's definitely a scary time when we're seeing this happening, and we really don't know what is going to happen in the future. Like I said, almost all of our grants are back and running again. So right now we feel as though we're in a good place. The only question right now is how we're going to move forward with our food distribution program. That is one that is coming to a hard stop. And then that is related to the USDA funding. But we are actively searching for other funding sources to keep that going. We also do have some food here on the island from a previous shipment. So we will be able to do at least one more distribution, hopefully in April. But we are also feeling confident that we're going to be able to find some other funds to secure that are not with the USDA, so that we don't run into these issues again.
And if I can ask, which organizations are you looking at right now?
Yeah, so we do have a grant. It's called the HOPE Grant. And that's one that it looks like we can begin using in this capacity. And this is going to be funneled through our wellness program. It ties in really well, as food is wellness. And then also we're looking at another grant that can potentially help us with more of the administrative side of things. That one's still in the process. So we don't have like a current list of people that we are surely going to go to for, but we're in the research process.
What should Unalaskans know about how these federal cuts might change the services your organization provides to the community?
Yeah, so right now, like I said, I think we're pretty lucky in that we are fully operational again. We have that grant funding back. That being said, we don't know what comes in the future. We don't know if similar orders are going to be made. But right now, I will say that we do feel pretty good about where we're at, and we're hoping for the best. Given future federal cuts and just with the knowledge of, you know, this has already happened, we are starting to look to diversify our funding sources so that we aren't reliant on federal grants, but we can look to other nonprofit organizations and philanthropic entities and so forth. So diversifying our funding sources is definitely something that we are interested in pursuing, especially given these recent events.
Can you get into what that looks like some of the specific organizations you're looking at?
We don't have that right now. This is all just like the initial process and a reaction to what has happened in preparation for the worst, which of course we don't want to happen, but yeah, just making sure our bases are covered.
So this is more of a proactive move?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So the second part of that question is, could you paint a picture of what your organization might look like if these funding reductions continue or deepen?
If we continue to see those funding reductions, we're definitely going to have to act quickly because a lot of our funding is at the federal level. It's not clear right now if we do see future reductions, if that will be across all of our federal entities that we work with. We work with BIA, we work with EPA, you know, it's not all in one category. So the details on that is definitely going to matter. But with the future cuts of funding, especially on the federal level, it is scary for us because that is where a lot of our revenue comes from. And what exactly that will look like it's really hard to paint that picture, I think, because it depends on which areas that's focused on. But I will say that moving forward, if we do see that, we're going to try very hard to maintain our employees. We did have to do a lot of shifting of some employees to different projects, which changed their scope of work completely sometimes, just to make sure that we had them working on projects that could keep them on board and to keep them working. So we are resilient and we're doing what we can to keep everyone on board, and we're hoping to continue in that fashion.
I want to follow up on something you mentioned earlier, that some employees were furloughed when these cuts initially came about. Were all of those employees brought back?
Yes, they were.
Okay.
Yes, okay. So we're very happy about that. Those are some really tough calls that have to be made. But luckily, yes, we were able to bring those employees back, and we're up and running once again.
That was part of a conversation I had with Kowalungan Tribal Council President and Interim Administrator Shayla Shishnikov. We discussed tribal programs and employees affected by federal funding cuts. That interview and a transcript will be posted on our website later today. That's at kucb.org. President Donald Trump issued an executive order to reshape U.S. elections last week. The order, among other things, mandates absentee and mail-in ballots be received by Election Day. It also requires proof of citizenship for registering to vote in federal elections. As the Alaska Desk's Alona Nyden reports, there's some concern that the changes might disenfranchise voters in rural Alaska Native communities.
Denise Lisick is a poll worker in Dillingham who oversaw early absentee voting there for the last two presidential elections. In 2020, she says it took 10 days after Election Day for the last batch of early voting ballots to get from Dillingham to Anchorage and from Anchorage to the election office in Nome. That's exactly the time that's allowed by state law. She says the new federal voting timeline would be tight for Dillingham and even tighter for smaller villages that need to get their ballots to their hub community first.
It will definitely disenfranchise smaller rural communities.
Lisek says she saw the majority of absentee ballots cast in the week before the election. If early absentee voting goes until the Monday before Election Day, she says it would be impossible to deliver ballots to the election office by the next day. And an earlier cutoff would mean that some residents have less voting time and less time to decide who to vote for. Jackie Ahanachak-Boyer is from Mikoryuk and works for Rural and Indigenous Outreach Program, which focuses on civic engagement. She says the new regulations might lead to a drop in voter turnout for Alaska Native residents. That number has already been declining over the last few decades.
I think it would be pretty devastating to the rural vote.
In Alaska, mailed ballots can be received within 10 days after Election Day if they're postmarked before that date. The timeline is helpful because hundreds of communities, predominantly Alaska Native, are accessible only by air. Rural Alaska Native villages regularly experience challenges during elections. Storms can prevent planes from coming in and out of the villages for days or weeks, and ballots often arrive late, first to villages and then to an election office. With a lack of volunteers, training, and outreach to residents, polling places sometimes open late or don't open at all, and mail-in votes get rejected. Roy Glowin is the president of the First Alaskans Institute. He says the combination of challenges makes it difficult to count votes from the rural Native communities.
It's just not fair, right? I mean, to exclude an entire population because of where they live in the country and to make it difficult for them to participate in this really important process that is a part of our civil liberties.
The executive order also mandates people to show proof of their citizenship, such as a passport or state ID, to register to vote in federal elections. In Alaska, eligible residents are automatically registered to vote when they apply for the PFD. Aglowin says that many Native Alaskans use tribal IDs because there is nowhere in their village or region to get a passport or a state ID. While the State Division of Elections does not track how many residents use tribal IDs to register to vote, Aglowin says even a small number matters.
Any number of voters that you miss in a community makes a big difference.
Last week, State Representative Robin Burke, who represents much of the North Slope and Northwest Arctic boroughs, reached out to the House Majority Council to ask about the legality of the new rules. Alaska Division of Elections spokesperson Stephen Kirch said in an email last week that the division is reviewing the new executive order and will work with the State Department of Law on any potential changes to policies. Although Kirch said that at this time, division staff don't know if there will be any impact in Alaska. In Anchorage, I am Alona Naidin.
Unalaska students are approaching their final weeks of the school year, but there are still plenty of activities ahead on the calendar. KUCB's morning host Ryan Humphrey spoke with the school's activities director Kent Russell about upcoming events. That includes the band's trip to Valdez and NYO competitions in Anchorage. Here's part of their conversation about what Unalaska students will be up to this spring.
So what's going on between now and the next couple of months? Just I know basketball's over, which is that's the biggest activity that we have. Because it's boys and girls all together.
Yeah, basketball season's busy. The busiest time is probably that October, November stretch where you have three or four sports going on and that student government's traveling. Remember that stretch?
Oh, yes, that's right.
October, you have volleyball, wrestling, swimming, cross country's finishing up, and then you have all that. That's pretty busy. Well, and yeah, this spring we have, we're busy. We have the band. The band trip is always a puzzle. But the band heading out, they head to Valdez, and so that'll be great, to allow the students to be able to go out. And we have two band groups. We have the regular high school band, and then we have I don't know what Mr. Pattish calls it, but he has another band period where kids get to play, their little different instruments. I call it more of a jazz band type of group, but they're going as well, and so.
Okay, so you're taking everybody, anybody in band that's earned the right to go gets to go.
Yeah, basically.
Well, that's nice. That's a good thing. That's a new thing this year. I remember talking to Mr. Pattish with that last year. He wanted to do that. It's if you get the students to sign up for the class and work it out in their schedule and want to do it, then yeah, absolutely. I didn't know they were going to travel, though. That's interesting.
Yeah, and a lot of them are in the regular band, too, so there's some crossover.
Good deal. So they're going to Valdez this year. Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right, nice. And when is that trip happening?
Mid-April.
Mid-April, nice. And so if I remember correctly, we're probably talking at least 30 kids and maybe closer to 40 for that,
yeah,
for that
trip?
Yeah,
there's 30. I have to look at my laptop. I think it was 32 kids and then four chaperones. We got a bus instead of vans. I was going to try to have chaperones drive vans, but we just figured the cost is about the same and it's easier just throw everybody on a bus.
Do you have to have a driver for the bus or is one of our people driving?
We're going to charter a bus out of Anchorage.
Oh, nice.
And so they're driving it. And so everybody just can get on the bus and sleep. And then the chaperones don't have to worry about, driving and chaperoning at the same time.
Good deal. That's great. All right. So we got the band trip coming up. What else is happening?
Then NYO and student government actually leave the same week. And that's the last week of April. And so NYO is obviously in Anchorage. And so it's a big event. Our kids usually do well in NYO, so it's always fun. And then student government leaves that same week, and they go to Sitka.
Okay. All right, good. So student government's going to Sitka, and the band is going to Valdez. NYO, obviously, theirs is still in Anchorage. That's pretty much the travel that we have left for the year.
Yeah, but then we're building next year's schedule. We almost have next year's schedule complete.
Nice.
And so we're trying to get that finalized. Yeah, and we're pretty much done. There's a couple things we're trying to work out, but we're pretty much set for next year's schedule.
Very nice. That's great, Mr. Russell. Appreciate that. So other than the travel, what's going on at the school that you're involved with? I know there's a lot, all the travel that happens, but there's also just the activities coming up. What else is happening?
So recently coming up, we have the career fair, I believe this next week.
Oh, that's right.
And so that'll be good. And then right after that, we're doing student government elections. And so our students will elect their class officers. And then those officers that get elected in this election, some of them will get to travel on this student government trip. So
we're going to do it a little differently this year, where the ones who have already been elected will start next year are going to get to go on the student government trip a little early.
Yeah.
That's a neat idea. I like that. That's good.
We
didn't do that before, so I like that's get them exposed to it before they actually take their positions, and so they can actually know what's expected of them before they get started. That's a great idea. Nice job on that one.
And then we have state testing like we always do. And then, our kids work hard on that. And it's good to see how we're doing. And Absolutely. Then, obviously, and then May gets here, and that goes fast. That's prom, graduation, all that stuff. So kids are busy getting ready for all the end-of-the-year stuff, like Russell's doing his big cultural dance prep.
Oh, yes.
And so we've been working on the organization of that.
That was Unalaska City School District Activities Director Kent Russell speaking with KUCB's Ryan Humphrey about the busy schedule ahead for students. Head to ucsd.net to find more information on the district's spring events. Here's a look at what's happening in Unalaska this week. Don't miss tonight's April Fool's Variety Show. KUCB is teaming up with our favorite pranksters at the Norwegian Rat Saloon for a day of fish tacos and fun. Tacos are available starting at lunch, and all taco proceeds go to KUCB. Get there early, because at 5 o'clock this evening, KUCB will run our most ridiculous archival videos, including Crab Terror, Another Day in Dutch, Marpole the Plastic Man, Dutch Harbor 99692, Pollock Terror, and a variety of April Fool's segments from Flash on Alaska. The live variety show starts at 7 o'clock, hosted by the Rats Ruthie and Caroline. You won't want to miss this event of comedy and music featuring local talent. Come on out to perform. We'll also have a Split the Pot raffle. Don't be a fool. Be there. The Unalaska City School District Career Fair is in the high school gym tomorrow afternoon from 1 to 3:15. To participate, reach out to Janae at 907-581-7705. Iluluk Family and Health Services is hosting a town hall tomorrow afternoon starting at 4:30 in the library. Clinic staff and their architectural team will discuss the proposed renovation and expansion of the IFHS clinic. And finally, the Fireside Writing Club meets in the library Thursday evening starting at 7. Share your poetry, spoken word, song lyrics, short fiction, or any creative work you've been crafting with a supportive community eager to provide feedback and inspiration. This club is open to all levels of writers, ages 16 and up, regardless of experience. For more information on these events and everything else coming up, check out your community calendar at kucb.org. That's the news from Unalaska. This is KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk. For more local coverage and community events, check out our website at kucb.org. Stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts. Make someone laugh today.
It's time now for your community window here on KSDP. Starting with job openings, the QT Tribe of Sandpoint is looking for a grant writer, an executive director, and an environmental assistant. The Shimmigan Corporation of Sandpoint is hiring a bartender. The Palouf Harbor Tribe is hiring a tribal environmental coordinator. EATS is hiring a behavior health trainee and a community health representative. Both of those positions can be in Sandpoint or King Cove. They are also hiring a clinical information clerk for King Cove, a community health aide for Falls Pass and Nelson Lagoon, and a clinical information clerk/janitor for Cold Bay. Community announcements. The Sandpoint School is hosting its second improvement plan meeting. Parents and community members are invited to join. This meeting will be Wednesday, April 2nd at 3:15. And that's all for the community window. If you have anything you'd like for us to put on the air or web, you can contact us through email at cw@apradio.org. You can call us at 907-383-5737, or you can still fax us at 907-383-5271. Also look for updates, meeting archives, and more at apradio.org. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Programming on KSDP is supported by the Schumigan Corporation. Located in Sandpoint, the Schumigan family of businesses includes property and equity management, the Sandpoint Tavern, the Anchor Inn Motel, and the Anchor Inn Lounge. The Schumigan Corporation, serving its shareholders and the people of Sandpoint, on the web at www.schumigan.com or by telephone at 907-383-3525. The Schumigan Corporation, hometown values and service, a proud sponsor of KSDP.
Oh, you better. the dance.
I need to sit and groove.
Oh! Come on, come on, come on. shine. Never thought I'd have to pay so dearly for what was already mine. For such a long, long time. Like a martyr, the hurt gets worse and the heart gets harder. We made mad love, shallow love, random love, and abandoned love. Accidentally, like a martyr, the hurt gets worse and the heart gets harder.
lost and found.
Thank you.
KSDP, the sweetest sound in the Aleutian Islands.